on Feeding the World. Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. It is a minute now before 11 o'clock, and coming up in a half hour on Words and Pictures, host SW Concert focuses on the Northwest Animation Festival with John Summerson, director of the short film Dears, and Sean Donnelly and Alessandro Minoli, creators of the Triptank series Jeff and Some Aliens. That's coming up in a half hour. Up next, stick around for Between the Covers. Today, host Ken Jones talks with Demay Roberts, author of the new book, The Letting Go Trilogies, Stories of a Mixed Race Family. And that is coming up next on KBOO. Thanks so much, KBOO members, for your support in our recent successful membership drive. Thanks.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for all your support during our recently completed spring membership drive. We can't do it without you. Thanks to all of our renewing members, our new members, and everyone who helped get KBOO to this fantastic place it is today. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
I wanna thank you, baby, for loving me. I wanna thank you, baby, for loving me.
We have a community announcement today. There will be a rally to demand that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the USDA's Wildlife Services stop scapegoating and killing cormorants to address the salmon decline. Already this year, nearly 1,500 cormorants have been killed, the birds nest on an island at the mouth of the Columbia River. The rally will be next Tuesday, May 17th from noon till 1 at Holiday Park, which is located at Northeast Holiday and 11th Ave. The rally is sponsored by the Audubon Society of Portland and the Center for Biological Diversity. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Seattle Theater Group presenting An Astrophysicist Goes to the Movies, two evenings with Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, September 19th and 20th at the Keller Auditorium. Tickets for Neil deGrasse Tyson this September go on sale this Friday, May 13th, and more information is available at portland5.com.
Welcome to Between the Covers, a weekly KBOO program all about books and the people who write them. I'm your host this week, Ken Jones. On today's show, our guest is Demay Roberts, author of the new memoir, The Letting Go Trilogies, Stories of a Mixed-Race Family. The book takes the form of a series of personal essays in which Demay writes about her biracial identity as the child of a Taiwanese mother and white Oklahoma-born father. The essays focus on her childhood in Taiwan, Japan, and Oregon, her identity as secret Asian woman, her visits to Taiwan as an adult, and her complex family relationships. Demay is a two-time Peabody Award-winning independent media artist who has written and produced more than 400 audio pieces and documentaries for NPR and PRI. She also hosts the long-running and very popular KBOO program Stage and Studio, in which she's the one doing the interview, so we turn the tables on her today. Demay, thanks for being here on Between the Covers.
Thank you, Ken. And you are turning the tables on me. It always feels weird to be interviewed when you're used to asking the questions, and asking the questions is always easier.
I think so. So I'm glad you're on that side of the mic today.
Yeah.
Demay, as mentioned, you've had a long, productive, and very successful career in radio with two Peabody Awards, one of the highest honors in broadcasting, kind of a Pulitzer Prize for radio and television. Your first came in 1989 for the radio documentary May May, A Daughter's Song. The May May in the title is your mom and means little sister in Chinese. Can you tell us a little about this work?
Well, that came at a time. It was 1989, and to put it into perspective, the Joy Luck Club had just come out. And it was at a time, I didn't know it because it was at the same time. It was at a time when a lot of people were just starting to explore their identities, their multicultural identities. So I had always heard these stories that my mom had told me, and they became like mythology, and they were unusual stories that I never really shared with people because I really didn't have a sense of what it meant to be biracial because there was no name for it at that time. And so when I started telling people stories as an adult about my mom and what she went through during World War II and about being sold to work as a bonded servant twice and when she was just a child, and how she escaped, her family and survived the war. You know, people were kind of stunned that that was my background. They assumed that I was white, come out of cover as a secret Asian woman, which is sort of what I jokingly called myself later on in years. It was a big step for me to explore my identity and to also sort of emerge as this radio producer. I had been doing theater, and I still continue to do theater for many, many years after. But it was the first time where I got to play around with sound, and it was a time when radio was a lot more experimental and it was artistic, and so you could play with radio theater as well as documentary in the same piece. And I basically applied for funding to go to Taiwan with my mom for a month, thinking that it would be this kind of this sort of unusual exploration, and I would learn so much, and there would be such revelations, and maybe it would bring us closer. And
a bonding experience.
Yeah, bonding experience, which we needed, but it ended up being totally the opposite. And we didn't speak to each other 6 months afterwards because we fought so much. But I did learn a lot about her, and so I put that all into a piece that was a way for me to explore my relationship with her more than my identity. Although those two are intertwined. So when it became what it did, it was an act of bearing my soul, bleeding on the radio, if you will. And it was so well received, and as an artistic piece, but also as something that was so deeply personal at a time when people were not doing that deeply personal work on the radio. So I was surprised that it won awards. I was surprised that it was so well received. And for me, it was more surprising when my mom actually heard it. And even though she disagreed with everything and she held it against me for pretty much the rest of her life, that you produced this piece and told the people, about me, that I was this uneducated Taiwanese woman or whatever, how she took it. It still brought us closer because it was the first time I could actually say these things to her, but it was through a radio piece.
And you mentioned that deeply personal part. You received your second Peabody 2006 for Crossing East, Our History, Our Stories, Our America, very big project, a major radio series about Pan-Asian immigration to the U.S., which was made up of 8 one-hour segments and hosted by George Takei and Margaret Cho. Why did you decide to make that leap from that personal statement in Main May, more intimate radio documentary, to a project with such a wide scope?
Well, there many decades had passed. And at the time, I actually had waited for somebody who was fully Asian, monoracial Asian, to do something of this scope, After my mom passed away, I sort of realized, I went through this whole identity exploration, another one, in which I wondered what part of me would still remain Asian if my mom had passed, because most people still, to this day, will look at me as white, and then I have to come out of my cover and not as much anymore because I'm so, vocal and, I seem to be out there. Regarding Asian American topics, especially on social media and through the Asian Reporter and through Theater Diaspora, which is the Asian American theater company that I helped form and started 2 years ago through Media Rights, my nonprofit that I run. But It was at a time when I wanted to explore that, but I also just kind of decided that nobody else was going to do an Asian American history series or any kind of Asian American series dealing with these topics on, you know, public radio. So I raised money for it. I hired about 50 scholars, artists, producers, and, you know, just got people together to create this over a three-year period of raising funds and doing this project. And so the scope of it was basically for me to learn more about Asian American history, which really wasn't taught as much in the schools. I mean, in colleges, but not necessarily in high schools, and it still isn't taught as much. And also to just sort of bring all these identities together through the purpose of creating this historic chronological documentary series. And I was thrilled that George Takei wanted to host it and Margaret Cho wanted to host it. That certainly was very important to the success of the series. But it was a struggle to get public radio stations to run it. And bear with me, this was 10 years ago in 2006, and we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary now. At that time, very few public radio stations even knew what Even the networks didn't really know that May was Asian American, Asian Pacific American History Month. And now it's been changed to Asian Pacific Islander American History Month. And, it's still not necessarily 10 years later, I hate to say, it's still only probably a few stations that really celebrate that, you know, KBOO being one of them, but not very many. And so for the 10-year anniversary, actually, I am getting it rebroadcast on KBOO for Memorial Day. Here's a little plug. On May 30th, KBOO is going to run the whole series. I urge KBOO listeners to set aside Memorial Day. You can hear the entire series, 8 hours of it, and learn something with your family about the contribution of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders in this country.
And now let's travel from the airwaves to the printed page. The essays in the Letting Go trilogies were written over a 10-year span. Many come out of and are an extension of the stories that you told in your earlier radio and stage work exploring your interracial roots. Why did you feel the need to write a memoir to put this in print?
Well, I've always written. I started off as a writer. And actually, when I was taking care of my mom, who had terminal breast cancer, I started the memoir then, actually. And so it's a longer period. But I tried to actively work on it after her passing, and it was so hard, so I had to set that away. So I set that aside for a bit because it got too painful. I think I started in 2009 trying to actually put this book together, and it just got very painful to explore that those chapters of my life. And then I started writing for the Asian Reporter, and I started writing for Oregon Humanity. So I've always been writing personal essays. The same work that I've done in radio, writing personally, I've also done with, for print publications. But it seemed like I was always in somebody else's anthology and it's great to have all of these different pieces in different places. So half of the pieces in this book I wanted to put into one anthology. And then I had a lot of work, memoir pieces that I had worked on while taking care of my mom, and then the years after. And I thought, well, I want to put that there together too. And so basically, I just wanted one place, I guess, for this. And as I've gotten older, I think about legacy. I think about, I guess, archiving my work to a certain extent. Same with The Crossing East, same with May May, which I turned into a film, which you know about, and thank you for supporting that. I just wanted to have, the bulk of my work are in mediums that, not a lot of people, it's not like, mass media culture, the public radio, theater, personal essays. They're not like, high end, blockbuster type of projects, but they are personal to me. And I just wanted to make sure that they would live on somehow, in some form. So the book was part of that, just to collect them into a collection. And then I got a grant. Thank you, Regional Arts and Culture Council, for supporting that, and hired a couple of editors, Jessica Morell, Sandra DeHellen. They both helped me so much in shaping it into something that was more than a collection of essays, that had some kind of thematic through line. And so that's where the aspect of stories of a mixed race family came from.
That's the subtitle of the book. The book itself is called The Letting Go Trilogies. The term trilogy is used a bit differently.
Because I have sets of three essays.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was going to mention. It's not like the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
No, there's not going to be another book after this, I don't think.
And I should tell listeners that that's the structure of the book. There's six chapters that are in three parts, and those are each called a trilogy. And then there's one chapter that's just one section called Remembrance in the middle of the book. Book's first trilogy is called Secret Asian Woman. You mentioned that a little before. What do you mean by Secret Asian Woman?
Well, you know, it's a take on Secret Agent Man. You know, everybody knows that. I try to use humor, you know, to talk about things that can be painful. And so I actually created a documentary called Secret Asian Woman a few years back, and a short film called Secret Asian Woman. And it was to explore the progression of the changing progression of cultural identity from decade through decade, at least the decades that I've lived through. So from the 70s, 80s and onward, you know, it came from a sense of what were the names that people would try to put on me, you know, Eurasian, going from Eurasian to Asian to biracial, to multiracial, to mixed race. And, you know, what are those progressions? And so all the time, you know, as I've evolved in whatever identity, I also went through Amerasian for a while too, but you do the best that you can. And so I've sort of settled on mixed race or biracial or multiracial, and I changed those, or I changed to Hapa. And so Secret Asian Woman is the act for me of coming, of being more vocal, more visible, and being able to, in a joking way, say, you know, I am Asian, and so you didn't think so, but here I am, and I'm coming out of my cover. You know, I'm not undercover anymore.
You're listening to Between the Covers on KBOO Community Radio. On today's show, we're talking with Dee Mae Roberts, author of the new memoir, The Letting Go Trilogies, Stories of a Mixed Race Family. In the first essay, Secret Asian Woman, you provide context for the rest of the book. And you talk about growing up biracial, both in Taiwan, your birthplace, Japan for a brief time, Boise for a very brief time, and then Oregon, your home for most of your childhood. Your worst experiences in the book came when you moved from Eugene to nearby Junction City, which, of course, is much smaller, more rural. What was different about Junction City and the way you were treated?
So a shout out to Junction City. I'm told that it is a lot more interracial and a lot more open and tolerant these days. But when we moved there, we were the only interracial family there in a town of about 2,000 people who were descendants of Scandinavian pioneers, you know, and had streets and lanes named after them. And I think they, you know, when you grow up in a small town, I think this is pretty universal. Most people would tell you, if you're a stranger in, you know, if you're a new family in a small town that has people who have grown up with each other, of course you're going to be looked at as outsiders. You know, that's universal. But for us, it was a lot more isolated. I'd been used to living in cities from Tokyo to Reno, you know, to Boise, to Eugene. You know, it's a small town, but it's still urban. We went to live in this small, I wouldn't even call it a farmhouse, a small house that was on 2 acres of land that had not been cleared. So it was mostly scrub brush and weeds. And you know, my dad and my mom had to work, and so they really didn't have time to take care of this. And so we were kind of isolated just physically, you know, on this tract of land on a busy highway that you really couldn't walk on without getting hit by something. So that was part of it. And also just being in a town that was not used to seeing people who were different. So when they found out, when the kids on the school bus saw that my mom was waiting for my brother and I, you know, we were, you know, I was like, what, sixth grade, my brother was in third grade. And they saw that, you know, there she was in her bouffant haircut, you know, hairdo, you know, waiting for us on the side of the road. And you know, you just heard this echo of this chorus of whispers saying, they're Chinese, you know. It's like, oh, that was so shocking. I was going, that's the first time I'd ever been ashamed of being Asian. I was accepted everywhere else. It's like it was no big deal. But that was the first time I remember thinking, oh, is that bad? You know, is that a horrible thing? And for my brother, who did look more Chinese, he went through hell for the rest of his time in Junction City and in school, where he was bullied, he was harassed, he was beaten up. You know, he experienced a lot of torment that shaped the rest of his life. And I write about his adult years now. He has not survived that. He has been wrecked, you know, emotionally from that experience. So, of course, I have bitter feelings about that time period. And for me, it was a time of withdrawing from being an outgoing person who climbed trees to somebody who hid. And then I became, you know, secret Asian girl, which I joke about, but I did not want to stand out. You know, I did not want anybody to assume that I was anything different because I felt like there was a threat. You know, if people, you know, did accept, you know that I was Asian. So that was me in my childhood and feeling ashamed about it. And that wasn't good. And that shaped me. And so, you know, it actually shaped both those experiences shaped the rest of my work, which was to do something about racism, to do something about being able to make identity more visible, both in any of the arts that I've been involved with, in radio and in my writing, you know, to basically stand for something and to fight against things that I felt were unfair.
Now, I would say the main character in the book, she certainly has the largest presence, is your mother.
Yeah.
And of course, you did the radio documentary, May about her, and the film. In the essay Ma's Trilogy, which is one of the longest in the book, you describe your mother's last few years when she was sick with cancer. I found it a very vivid account that kind of put me almost in the room with her. And yet it's also somewhat restrained, even clinical at times. I was wondering, was that a difficult essay to write, especially in that tone?
Wow, I didn't think it was. I thought it was pretty emotional. You know, I think it is difficult to write this, especially write with the length that a book requires, as opposed to a radio piece where, you know, in 5 minutes I can make you cry real fast, you know. But with a book, it does take a lot more description and a lot more putting you in the scene.
I guess that's I meant, that there was a lot of describing her coughing and her sickness and her weakness, right, and what she would eat and all that. So I found that just extremely descriptive. And I mean, I was feeling emotions by reading it, but I thought the account itself was,
yeah,
was not that emotional.
I was, you know, when I do this personal work, I kind of step out, you know, I step out to try to look at it from, I guess, from a more outsider perspective. And honestly, it really is hard to write yourself as a character. That's, I think, the biggest challenge in this book. I don't even know if I have succeeded enough, and I think it's something that I need to keep exploring. How personal do you want to get? And I feel like I am incredibly personal, but when I produce a work, people want me to be even more personal. So how much do you give people? You know, how much can you leave for yourself? And that is the struggle for me. If I bare my soul too much, will there be much left of me? You know? So, you know, because I go there, I mean, I've been through talks where I really went there and I was very honest with people. And afterwards, I feel like I've lost something of myself, you know? So it's something that I always have to ride that, you know, that that edge. How much am I going to go, you know, fall off the cliff?
Well, there's also the problem of what is identity there. I think we learn a lot about you in the book through your relationships with your father, your mother, your brother in particular, those three figures, and of course, some of the other characters in the book. But in terms of who you are, really, you're a little different with your mother than you are with your father and you are with your brother.
And I'm different in public than I am in private. I know. I sometimes wonder if I am a chameleon, you know? Because I've had to navigate so many different worlds, not just with my family relationships, because each one I've had to relate to differently, but also in my work, you know, whether I'm in theater, whether I'm in radio, whether I'm you know, doing, you know, my writing, it's like I have to go to these different words. And, you know, through running a nonprofit that does a lot of social outreach, that's a whole nother personality. And being a public speaker, that's a whole nother personality. So I wonder, I don't know who I am. I think I'm a combination of a lot of different aspects of my personality. And it could be clinical, Ken. I don't know.
Well, I think that comes through in the book. Yeah, there was one part.
It does come through.
There was one interesting part in that very chapter, Dime, where at this point you're living in Portland. Your mother is very sick, as we said, with cancer.
Oh, in the book, yes.
Yeah, in the book. And you're driving back and forth from Portland to Eugene. On one of these drives, you're listening to NPR, I guess, and you're actually critiquing the radio documentary. They're not using audio ambience enough to give you a sense of
location. Yeah, that
really
bothered me.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, man, here she's coming back from visiting her mom. She's very worried about her, but all of a sudden her attention is on this particular piece she's listening to on the radio. And that to me is just real life. That's who we are. We're not all the daughter. We're not all the son. We're not all the brother or the sister. We're also, in your case, you're the artist, the radio documentarian, a number of hats that we wear, and I think that comes through in the book.
And then in one of the earlier pieces, I'm just closed, you know, I just opened a show, On the Verge, which is about Victorian women explorers traveling through time. And I have to, on opening night, I have to call to see if my mom's still alive. You know, I mean, that was my last acting gig, actually, because it was so traumatic to have her collapse, you know, the week of tech rehearsal, and to open a show and then drive back to Eugene that night to see how she is and to see if, you know, if what I needed to do. And so that, you know, that is something that I think most people could relate to, is like that. How do you balance the work with the caregiving? It's different with your parents. It's so different. It's such a huge passage to be the caretaker of your parents, to be the caregiver of your parents, and to know that no matter what you do, you're doing something wrong, you know, and you're still trying to take care of them. You're also trying to take care of yourself, and you've got your family, and you've got, you know, your work, and then just the distance, you know. At least it wasn't bi-coastal, which a lot of my friends have had to deal with too. So it was a huge passage for me, and I feel like that probably was the most important thing for our relationship, for me to be there to take care of her, no matter how much, you know, how many pounds I gained, you know, doing it, no matter, you know, how much stress that I went through, and my blood pressure went through the roof, you know, during that experience. But I had to do that because I knew that if I didn't, I would have the regret that I still have over my father's passing, you know, and I couldn't live with that. But I also knew that when you have a deadline like that, which is what terminal illness gives you, is a deadline to make peace, to resolve things that were unresolved, to be with your parent so that you could work out whatever and find that love. And I feel like we did that. You know, and so that was important to me, no matter what the price.
In an author's note at the very end of the book, you write that completing the book was, quote, a chance to free the pain, the anger, grief, guilt, and regret I associate with my family, my identity, and the past. And that explains, of course, why you call it the Letting Go trilogies. So when you finished the book, did you feel that release, that letting go?
I did, to a certain extent. I think that's going to be a lifelong process. You know, the curse of having that as your title is that every time I start to get mad about something, go, let that go, let that go. It's the title of your book, let that go, you know. So that's good. It's like it's making me let go. I don't know if I've completely let go of everything. It will be a process, but I did let go of a lot of it. Yeah. And I recommend that to other writers. It's cathartic, but it's also freeing in a sense that for me, instead of holding it all within me and thinking about it, now I put it into this book and there it is, and there it will live. It doesn't have to entirely live with me for the rest of my life. It is in that book, you know? So,
Which also might work as a release for your readers in many ways.
I hope so.
If they're in similar situations. A lot of people in our generation are facing that.
Yeah.
Where we're caregivers.
I kind of did that early.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, 15 years earlier. Uh-huh. And it was so traumatic for me. I hope that people who are going through it could could relate to it and hopefully feel like they can let go of their own guilt, their own regret, their own feelings of inadequacy over what you're doing, you know, what you're trying to do to help your parents, help your children. It's something that I think we, especially when you are as driven as a person as I am, you feel like you're always doing something wrong, you know, that you're never going to be able to get it right and never be perfect. And that's part of, you know, letting go too, is realizing that that's a process and to be easier on yourself.
Dimay, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Well, thank you, Ken. I just really appreciate this. It's very exciting, and thank you for reading my book. And it will be on, after May 23rd, it will be available on Amazon, and there'll be a Kindle version for people who want to check it out. And you can always find out more at dmayroberts.com.
You've been listening to our interview with Dimay Roberts, author of the new memoir, The Letting Go Trilogies, Stories of a Mixed-Race Family. I'm Ken Jones, and this has been Between the Covers on KBOO Community Radio. Many thanks to Dimay for talking with us at KBOO, and for all of you for listening.
Good people, another shining star has transcended. Prince Rogers Nelson has physically left this earth, and while he is greatly missed, his art will live forever. On May the 12th from 7 p.m. to midnight, we at Guess Who's Coming to Radio will pay tribute to this master of creativity in the best way we know how, by honoring his diverse range, merging jazz, classical, rock, soul, and more, with spiritual and political connections. This five-hour tribute is not only done with respect for the artist, but his longtime supporters and loved ones. Again, stay tuned to Guess Who's Coming to Radio on May the 12th from 7 p.m. to midnight, where we honor the legacy and work of Prince Rogers Nelson on KBOO, your community radio.
That was music from the short film Dears.